Welcome to the Meet Me Downstairs podcast. I'm your host, Britt, and I'm here to bring you some real-ass conversations about what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a mother, what it means to really just live in this world in female skin and feel empowered and educated and connected to our body. So the type of conversations that you're gonna hear are gonna be with a mixture of experts in the field of female existence and also real women, real mothers, just wanting to share a window into their world so that we can connect better. Remember, you're never alone. Your sisters are right here on the other end of your speaker, and you can always message us to connect deeper. So get ready to learn about yourself, to love yourself, and just embrace this experience. Pop in your headphones, turn up your speaker loud, and let's do the damn thing. Hello, beautiful listeners. It's your host, Britt, back with another loving episode for you. And today we're talking about a topic that's extremely relevant in my life at the moment. I always kind of make an effort to take a scan of my personal life and the things that I've got going on and seek out resources that may help me. And if I'm not finding the type of support that I'm looking for, then I'm going to find a way to get it and also share it with you guys. So I've recently entered a loving co-parenting relationship, and to kind of help myself and my ex navigate through it in the best way that we can, I've been outsourcing for any insight possible in this field, and honestly, it was really slim. So I kind of saw this as an opportunity to not only share with you guys something going on in my life, but also to create a resource for myself and anybody that's going through co-parenting or divorce, or perhaps just approaching it in their lives and wants to know a bit more. So I came across our guest today on another podcast where she was talking about relationships in general, and I was obsessed. She's so amazing. So as her area of expertise is couples and relationships, I reached out to her to see if she'd be interested in having a discussion with me on successful co-parenting and what that could look and feel like. And here we are today. So I'm talking about the extremely kind and talented, it's so knowledgeable, Dr. Alexandra Solomon. She is a clinical assistant professor at Northwestern University, where she teaches the internationally renowned course called Building Loving and Lasting Relationships, Marriage 101. And she's also a licensed clinical psychologist at the Family Institute at Northwestern University. She is the author of two books. One is called Taking Sexy Back, How to Own Your Sexuality and Create the Relationships That You Want. And number two, Loving Bravely, 20 Lessons of Self-Discovery to Help You Get the Love That You Want. She also writes a column for Psychology Today and talks on a number of media outlets that you guys all know, which is The Today Show, O Magazine, The Atlantic, Vogue, and Scientific American. She also has an online course that you can have access to right now called Intimate Relationships 101, as well as so many incredible resources on her website, dralexandrasolomon.com. And also head over to Instagram and follow her at dr.alexandra.solomon. I'm going to put all of this stuff in the episode show notes so that you don't have to go anywhere. You can just go right here and then find her and engage with her. And otherwise, please subscribe and review us. It so supports this channel. And I'm going to stop now because she is fantastic. And I'm so grateful to her for this episode. It has brought so much insight into my life, my relationship, and taking us into this like amazing, loving space. So Dr. Solomon, I'm so grateful for you. Let's do this. Dr. Solomon, thank you so much for joining today. I'm so, so grateful to be having this conversation with you and, you know, talking about relationships, communication in relationships, and a little bit on successful co-parenting and what that kind of looks and feels like for two couples. So thank you. Oh my gosh, so grateful that you're here.
It's great to be with you.
Okay, so my first kind of question is just breaking down relationships a little bit. And, you know, if we think about it, it's really two very different people coming together to form a union. And I think there's lots of preconceived notions that you just mix And really, we kind of forget a little bit that it's two individuals coming together. And I just love the stuff that you talk about when it comes to relational self-awareness. So I thought maybe you could just give us a little info on what that is. Describe that for us a little.
Sure. So, you know, my work moves between sort of these three corners of a triangle. I'm teaching. I do a lot of teaching and training, both of regular old people. I teach college students. I have taught graduate students. And I teach clinicians about love, sex, relationships, how to do couples therapy. So it's a part of my work. Another corner of the triangle is I am a therapist. So I have a caseload of individuals and couples at all stages of development. And then the third corner of the triangle is translation. So I spend a lot of time translating research and clinical wisdom into like really usable relationship education tools for people. So our conversation today is part of that corner of the triangle, the books I write, the e-course I developed, all of that kind of translational work. And what I know to be true is that the through line in all of that is I'm always, always, always helping people understand what's going on inside of themselves in order to bring their best, bravest, most wholehearted self to their most important relationships. And I'm usually talking about intimate relationships, but oftentimes I'm talking about parenting or work relationships. So it really is about the self in context. How do we understand the baggage that we bring in? Because we all bring our past with us. We bring our socialization with us. We bring our belief systems with us. And until and unless we're able to really compassionately and really curiously understand what gets stirred up in us, unless we're willing to do that, our relationships are going to be disconnected, conflictual. We're going to kind of constantly feel like we're on edge or victims of each other. Yeah. And so this process of understanding who we are is really empowering and intimacy promoting.
Amazing. And you have this quiz. I haven't taken it yet, but I will looking forward to it on your website. So for anyone listening, I will link that in the episode notes so that you guys can go and take her quiz as well. So talking a little bit about childhood and the things that kind of happen in those forming years of adolescence and how does that affect the way that we love, I suppose?
It does profoundly. And so I spend a lot of time with people, you know, looking in the rearview mirror, like understanding the past. And it's not ever about blaming our parents. I believe that every parents, you know, to the degree of their own healing, to the width of their own, you know, vision and awareness, right? So parents really try to do the best they can during those critical years. So it's not about us looking up our family tree and like, you know, blaming the people who came before us, but it certainly is about understanding what are the patterns in our family. So one of the most powerful things that I do with people is we create genograms. We map out our family trees. And if people who are listening haven't done that before, it's quite a powerful exercise to sort of like locate yourself within this larger system. And if you can get up, you know, a couple or three generations and start to write about who are those people and what were their stories, because all of their stories live inside of you, right? When you were little, in your family growing up, you were like a little social scientist and you were absorbing all kinds of messages about how relationships work by watching the people around you, watching how the big people related to each other, as well as feeling how the big people related to you, right? We are so relational. We learn about ourselves through how we are treated. And we adapt, you know, we become the people that our families need us to be. And that's a really beautiful thing that when we're little, we absolutely have to figure out how to belong in our family. Like our survival, you know, our survival rests on belonging within the system so that we can be kept safe. But in that process of belonging, I think it's really important for us to wonder what parts of ourselves did we split off? Did we turn the volume down on? Did we ignore in order to fit in? Because all the ways we had to be when we were little are going to shape what happens when we fall in love. We pretty much, you know, through attachment science has been really helpful in helping us understand that the way that we attach to our caregivers when we were little is pretty much the way we attach to our intimate partners when we're big. And so the past comes with us, and that's not a good thing or a bad thing, but it is something we need to understand so that we can then make choices about, okay, so I didn't get to express my needs when I was little. Yeah. So I'm at risk of not expressing my needs now in my intimate relationship. I know that's a risk for me. So how am I going to grow? How am I going to claim something I haven't yet been able to claim in my life?
Wow. Yeah. I mean, as you're saying this, all I'm thinking about is like, okay, what am I doing right now for my son? How am sure. I, you know, my gosh, there's so much pressure.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny you say that because when I was trained in like hard in graduate school, my program was like hardcore, like psychoanalytic, psychodynamic, which is like Freud, like old school Freud, and all the people kind of followed after him. And it was really, really mother blaming, like everything, like every disorder under the sun, autism, mom's fault, schizophrenia, mom's fault, like every single neurosis that a kid could have. You would just, the whole theory was basically draw a line from the kid's pain to the mom was either too intrusive or too neglectful. And so that was how I was trained. And so then that was all, you know, pretty much well and good. Like I was in my 20s. I was in my own therapy. I was critiquing how my family had raised me. That's all fine. And then I had a baby and I was like, oh no, this is not fun anymore.
Oh my goodness.
You know, and thank goodness, because that is the kind of humility, right? Like that's the, we need to, I think as moms, we need to understand that certainly the way we relate to our babies shapes them. And we are going to be paralyzed and paranoid if we expect perfection from ourselves. So that's no good either. Amazing. Then we're just parenting from fear of getting it wrong. Well, that's, you know, that's no place to parent from either.
Yeah. I love that you said that, you know, because perfection doesn't live anywhere. So it's just a matter of figuring out what works. But, you know, I think this probably is in all relationships, no matter kind of whether it's romantic or parental or friends or, you know, but we have all these expectations on our partners or ourselves or our friends. And all, more often than not, it kind of leads to disappointment when things aren't met. So I suppose, how can we work on releasing expectations, or is it even creating more realistic outcomes for ourselves? But what do you think on expectations in relationships?
We certainly come into relationship with all kinds of expectations, many of which are outside of our conscious awareness. And then we end up feeling disappointed because our partners don't live up to a script that they didn't even know they were being asked to live up to.
Yeah.
So part of relational self-awareness is understanding like these are the things that I want and need in relationship and learning how to ask for them. And so expectations are fine as long as they are spoken, right? So like very often we don't even know that we had an expectation until it's disappointed.
Yeah.
So the more we can sort of front end it by willing to have conversations about, you know, boundaries, about clarifying who we are to each other, about what's, you know, where's the line between like what I'm responsible for and what you're responsible for. The more we can have those conversations about the relationship, the less we're going to just kind of like back end into experiences of disappointment. And the more we can, like the other thing about expectations is sometimes they aren't reasonable, you know, maybe there are things I want from you that you have to just look me in my eyes and say, Alexandra, I can't, that's not something I can do. I can't promise you that. And can you be realistic with me, you know, and sort of clarify with me what's reasonable. And then then it's mine to decide whether I can let it go, adjust, adapt. I think it's also helpful to understand like, okay, why is that an expectation? Like, do I need you to be a certain way because of something that's unhealed inside of me? Mm. Like if my expectation is now that we're a couple, I expect that you spend all your free time with me and that you don't do, you know, solo nights out with your friends. Okay, that's why do I have that expectation? What's my fear? Yes. So paired with an expectation is oftentimes a fear or a story. And can I get curious about that? Like, why? What is it that frightens me about you going out with your friends? And what part of that is, you know, am I like punishing you for a crime that you didn't commit? Maybe my last partner, you know, whatever, cheated on me and was part of this whole like network of friends that like supported and allowed and enabled the cheating behavior. So I come into our relationship with a really understandable wound there, but you're not the one that did that.
Yeah.
So rather than trying to kind of control you in order to prevent that God awful thing from happening again, I'm placing this expectation on you that isn't reasonable. Mm. And actually traps both of us, you know, yeah, in the past.
Yeah, gosh, there's so much awareness that kind of has to come in. And we've been taught, like, we haven't been taught this. I feel like only now we're kind of coming into the light of people having these conversations and, you know, being like, it's okay to open up some stuff and it's okay to be brave and it's okay to see things that are scary about yourself. Because, you know, I mean, I have so many expectations for myself. And when I really go in, I'm like, oh, okay, this is there. And I don't think I was ready for that, but here we are. So let's deal with it. But before, I don't think I was ready to have those conversations with myself.
That's right. So. That's right. That's right. When we notice an expectation, can we get curious about the fear that drives the expectation?
Yeah.
And then, okay, what am I trying to guard myself against? What am I trying to prevent? What seems so unbearable if that happened?
Yeah. Oh, so true. Oh my goodness. So yes. Okay. Bringing some convo into like breaks in aware in relationships and in particular co-parenting. And as I mentioned to you kind of before we started recording, this is one is personal because I'm in a co-parenting relationship and I would say it's a very positive one. Like I'm almost even surprised at how well it's been going. But what I like to do with this podcast is when I notice things that are happening in me, and then I look around the world and look around in research and other, you know, forms of media, and I'm not seeing as many conversations happening about it, I think, okay, well, maybe this is an opportunity for me to bring something to light, because I know there's many other people out there who are going through this stuff. So one of the big things that I sort of have seen when it talks about, you know, divorce or co-parenting or like breaks is narratives like divorce is a failure or you should hate your ex or all these really negative connotations. And I feel like that just does a disservice to the success of what a different kind of relationship could look like. So I don't know. I don't even know how to pose this question, but I guess it's like, what are your thoughts on romantic relationships ending and yes, shifting negative narratives?
Yeah, let's go there. Let's start there. But like, yeah, also, I'd be really curious to ask you at some point, like, what do you think is going on with you and your former partner that's helping you co-parent well? I think that's yeah, a really important question, like to kind of like figure out what are some of your secrets to success.
Sure.
But you're right that there's, you know, the predominant narrative about relationship endings is that they are failures. And you know, there are ways in which, like, I look at my own field. So my field is called marriage and family therapy, mm-hmm, right? That's, and so we, you know, we value marriage above anything else. And yes, we value marriage as, you know, there's only one way to end a marriage successfully, and that is through death, right? That's if a marriage ends in divorce, we equate it with a failure.
Yeah.
So much so that even that you know, some of the different models of therapy, so there are different approaches to couples therapy, like how you help a couple move from pain to relief or from, you know, conflict to calm. There's different models, different parts of the field have different ways of approaching that. So there's research then about like, what are the effective ways to treat a couple? And it's interesting that one of the outcome variables when you're doing research on couples therapy, one of the outcome variables is whether or not the couple stays together. Mm. So even embedded in the notion of how you model successful therapy is whether or not a couple gets divorced.
Right.
When in fact, what every couples therapist under the sun knows is that sometimes a really graceful divorce is a mercy and it is actually a good outcome. So our notions of what a good outcome and a bad outcome are reflect this larger narrative that yeah, divorce equals a bad outcome. When that's not, for many people, their lived experience is it's actually a mercy. It's an act of kindness. It's mm-hmm, what really does serve not just the parents, but the kids as well. Which is not to say that divorce isn't painful. Divorce yeah, is painful. It is a grief. So can we widen out our lens enough to hold onto that both and of divorce is nothing, you know, no one ever is like, oh my God, I'm so excited about my divorce.
Yeah.
And it is not the end of the world. And it is yeah, not, it doesn't, because what we do then is people then start their co-parenting journey behind the eight ball. They start yes. co-parenting from a place of shame. And what we are doing is less than. And whenever we feel like we are starting from a place of inferiority and less than-ness, we're parenting against, like, we're everything we're doing is trying to prove that we're okay. And that's just a horrible place to be. Rather than creating a structure, a co-parenting structure, from a place of wholeness, right? From a place that, okay, this is our reality. And how do we co-create a reality that is in our best interest, that is for our highest good, and most importantly, for the highest good of our kids? If we start from that place of neutrality, like this just is the reality. We are a two-parent, we are two-household family. Yeah. Okay, that's the reality. Now let's build from there rather than building from a deficit.
Amazing. Yeah. Because, you know, even society, like, you know, people finding out, they're sort of like, oh, okay. Like they already are looking at you like, this isn't good. So mm-hmm. I just think there's so there. Yeah. The odds are stacked against you from before you even make that decision to end a relationship, because there's so much fear surrounding what are other people going to think, or is this a failure, or yeah, so yes. But if you right. kind of, as you said, are putting it in a different way and thinking, okay, well, how can we do this in a loving way for two families or two homes? I can't remember how you said it.
Household family.
Mm-hmm. A two household family. Yes.
You still and starting are a family. From there.
Yes, exactly.
Whether parents are married or not, you are still a family. You're
100%.
You're just a big blended, you know, kind of more complicated than nuclear family.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Amazing. So then what are ways that you feel like you can keep this successful relationship going, or create one, a successful version of this new type of relationship when there's kids in the mix?
Okay. So here's what we know from the divorce. My read of the divorce literature, and others read of, you know, there's been lots of research now on the impact of divorce on kids.
Yeah.
And what we know to be true is that divorce has negative impact on kids. You see drops in, you know, grades, you see increases in mental health symptoms and behavior problems around the transition, because nobody likes transitions. No, none of us do particularly well in transition. So what we see are short-term things that look problematic and painful for kids, and then longer-term evening out and easing up, and kids from divorced families tend to do fine in the longer term, except for the kids of parents who stay at war with each other. Those right. are the kids that have the longer term mental health, behavioral health problems, because it's really, really because a kid deeply loves both their parents, right? Mm-hmm. They are a part of both of their parents, whether they're adopted or biological, they are part of each of their parents, right? So their default setting is profound love for both mm-hmm. parents. And so it is, I mean, it like brings tears to my eyes to say, so to watch the two people who anchor you in this world tear each other apart is painful. Like that's where the pain comes. And so the responsibility really is on the parents to end well, which is so hard to ask, because if you're ending because there's pain, mm-hmm. but to end well and to end with as much consciousness as you can so that you can free your kids. Really, to liberate your kids from having to choose, having to decide, having to place their loyalty somewhere. And I think what's helpful there is for parents to remember that your ex can be a really, you know, maybe they were actually like a really, really crappy partner to you. Mm-hmm. Maybe they, you know, whatever, cheated on you or dishonest with you. They could be really a crappy partner and a decent parent.
Yes. Like
both those things can be true. And that can sometimes be a pathway towards a bit of peace, is kind of being able to hold on to that complexity. Like, oh, they were terrible to me, and I can see that they are actually decent to my kid with my kid.
Yeah. With conflict and stuff that comes up, there's fear surrounding conflict. So not wanting to say the wrong thing, or fear of really being honest, or what are the consequences going to be? And then you hear stories of kids being used as pawns or playing cards. And, you know, how can we kind of be aware of what we're doing, or separating ego from kid? And yeah, I don't know, avoiding mm-hmm. this sort of like using your kids against the partner.
To me, what seems like the major theme in a two household family is I have to again and again let go of control because yeah. I actually don't have control over what happens when my kid is in the other house. Mm-hmm. And for some of us, what is our biggest through line in parenting is a belief that I have to be in control of all of it all the time mm-hmm. in order to keep my kid safe, alive, well, healthy, happy. And so parenting often gives us this like illusion of control. I mean, especially early on, right? Because when kids are babies, like you're really, you know, you really are in control of yeah. their world and who's in and who's not in. And, you know, you really, and there's a ferocity there, right? Like a mm-hmm. fierceness with which we want to protect our babies. And so I know I grew up in a divorced family. My parents divorced when I was 3. And so I was, you know, back and forth between two households. My mom would say that was the biggest pain point for her. It was just letting go of control. There were times when she couldn't see me. I was in another house. Yeah. She wasn't in charge of what I was doing or what I was eating or how people were talking to me. You know, mm-hmm. she couldn't be in charge of any of that. And that was her big pain point, was just like that loss of control.
Yeah.
And so in some ways, you know, parents who are co-parenting are smacked with that lesson that really ultimately is true for all of us parents anyways, right? I mean, I'm now the mom of a 16-year-old and 18-year-old, and that's my reckoning is I'm not in control. I have to let go of control. But I think for parents who are co-parenting, they're just dealing with that lesson a lot earlier yeah. than parents who have their kids under their roof, you know, round yeah. the clock. But tell me, how does that land? How does that land for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're fairly fresh in the co-parenting space, but we ended, like, whilst there was a lot of pain and stuff going through and like to get to that decision, it felt like a very mutual decision. We've just put our son first mm-hmm. over everything. And I also trust my ex. So I actually don't fear when my son is with him because I feel like I trust him. I trust the way that he parents. And I think that is the same in reverse. So there's this like mutual love and this mutual understanding and the fact that we are family. So but I totally see what you mean. And then there's fears of like, okay, well right now we can kind of control this because we trust each other and still love each other. But then what happens when... another person comes in the mix and then has a role in parenting your child on both sides? Because our son is young, so he's almost 2. And so there's going to be whoever it is coming in. So that's probably I don't think we're ready to kind of explore that yet, but it is a thought that I have and I know he has, and just like, well, there's going to be another person at some mm-hmm. point playing a role in parenting our kid and we're not there. Like the other person is in another home.
That's right.
So that's right. Probably the next nerve wracking loss of control.
That's right. That's right. And there's a way in which, you know, I'm so glad that you brought up this word trust, because mm-hmm. I think that's a huge variable, is that it's much easier to co-parent when you can basically trust your ex's parenting. So yeah. you don't have an urge to micromanage. You're not like triple checking, like, well, what did he eat when he was at yeah. your house? What was he wearing? What were you doing? So you don't, you know, trust is an energetic shortcut, you know, trust is basically like, I don't have to ask questions because basically whatever happened would be in the realm of what I would have wanted to have happen. So that's huge. And I know there are probably people who are listening where they're like, yeah, really, that's easy for you to say because you trust your ex and I don't trust my ex. Yes. And so that is why, you know, people do in the US, we call it like a JPA, like a joint parenting agreement, right?
Right.
Where within that agreement are some bounds about what are the agreements we're making about the kind of basic rules of engagement that happen in each of our households. So it's not, and so that's a document or a contract that at least tries to establish a floor, like a grounding in these are the kinds of things that I expect you to do. And these are the kinds of things you expect me to do mm-hmm. so that we don't have to spin our wheels and check in and worry. And then you're right that when that when a new partner enters mm-hmm. either of your realms, that will shake things up, because right now you have this little system of three and it's yes. working and you're clicking along, and then yes. you'll be a system of four and five, you know?
Yeah.
And I think oftentimes that what's going to be so important is your relationship with your ex's new partner. Like, yes. can you meet that person human to human? Mm-hmm. Can you really see them as additive to your little boy's life
yeah.
rather than replacing? And can you really see them as more than just your ex's new partner, really yeah. see them as a human being, you know, and part now of your child's village. And that's, and I think there are some times when that's really difficult, because sometimes our ex's new partner is their affair partner. So it's right. really freaking hard to see my ex's new partner as anything besides a home wrecker, blah, 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 yeah. you know, but that work of seeing your ex's new partner as a human can be some of the most spiritually growing, like yeah. expanding work that we can do. And we do it. It's work that the only motivator to ever do that work would be for the sake of your kid, yeah. right? Because if someone says, if you do this, it's good for your kid, that's one of the best ways to motivate a parent, right? Because there's yes. like nothing that we wouldn't do for our kids. So, okay, I will move from hate to graciousness and expansiveness and humanity, but only for the sake of my kid. Like nothing yes, else would, nothing you know. Else. Right. In another situation, I would just stay stuck in my hate and be happy there. But okay, fine. All right. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Because then I think as well, you know, if we're thinking narratives and societal narratives, it is like, well, I should hate my ex's current partner. And then really, I like to flip it a little bit. I mean, depending on the circumstances, I know things are really hard if, like you said, it's the partner of a, or it's the affair partner. But there's actually similarities, because the same things that you liked, they probably like, and you know, things, I don't know, but I'm saying this from like, we have not experienced this mm-hmm. yet. So it's easy for me to be like, oh, well, I feel like I can do this and whatever, and not actually be confronted with that yet. But yeah, I think again, it is that society kind of giving this negative outlook mm-hmm. on something that, as you said, I loved the word additive that you used, a positive additive to your new family. Because the odds of it happening are like so high for both of us. We're young. They're, mm-hmm. you know, we both value love in relationships. And I think that it'll be natural for both of us to have new relationships. So I just know it's an inevitable, I suppose it's just like, how do we then approach that from the best way going forward?
I recently heard this. It was somebody who is kind of in the witchy realm. And she mm-hmm. was saying, you know, like our words are spells. So your words are spells. So you are casting a spell right now that I embrace the possibility that I will really actually probably like my partner, my ex's mm-hmm. new partner, because they value relationship, because my ex is somebody who at one point I fell in love with. So when somebody else falls in love with them, I probably will see a kind of kinship there.
Yeah.
And then the idea of like your little boy getting to look at his mama and his, you know, his new step parent and see the two of you, whatever, laughing together on the sidelines yeah. of a game together. Like that is a gift. Mm. Like that is, as somebody who's the kid of divorce, one of the most painful things for me was feeling like I had to choose my mom or my stepmom. My mom and my stepmom could not stand, you know, they were not in any kind of alliance at all. And that was incredibly painful
yeah.
for me to feel yeah. like I was torn between these two women who, as a little girl, they were each a force of nature, right? They were each like way, way more than human beings. They were, you know, they were forces of nature. They were yeah. mothers. Like they yeah. were just like these huge heroic figures. And the fact that they held each other in contempt was painful for me. Yeah. And so I do think there is such, there's such possibility there to have to say, actually, there's no reason I have to, I don't have to fall into this narrative of my ex's new partner is somehow a threat to me. I don't yeah. have to fall into that narrative. I can do something different.
And I suppose hoping then that they too are down for that as well, because I suppose it's, again, two people. So it's a whole nother relationship.
Well, that's right. That's right. I think that's an area I've been thinking a lot lately about, kind of how to support, you know, women and men who are entering into a blended family system, you know, because I do think they need a woman who, like, let's just play it out. Like a woman who falls in love with a man who has a child. She's choosing to become, you know, a girlfriend and a stepmom in one fell swoop, right? Yes. She's sort of choosing. Yes. And so that relationship has some particularities. They don't get to have sort of this honeymoon period where it gets to be the two of us. You go from like 1 to 3 or 1 to 4 to love somebody who already has kids is a different kind of love story. Mm-hmm. And there's a different kind of expansiveness that she needs in order to enter that system. She's got to kind of feel it out. She's got to understand it rather than coming in full force and being like, it's this way and I'm here and here's how it goes. No, like feel your way in, right? Yes. Like enter gently. There are stories upon stories here. You are entering an entire like civilization that existed before you. Get to know it, find your way in, come in with a big expansiveness and a big sense of faith that we will find our way.
Yeah.
And that's something really beautiful about that. And same thing for a man who loves a woman who has children, right? I'm saying this in completely heterosexual language and it doesn't need to be that way, there are some gender things, right? Like we literally have like a whole trope of like the wicked stepmother. So there's a way in which I think sometimes a woman who's becoming a stepmom feels like the wind's at her face because there's this whole like cultural narrative about her wickedness. And I worry that compromises her ability to be just like curious and patient and gracious. And for a man to come in, he doesn't need to prove himself. He can just come in and get to know the scene, get to know the system, understand who these kids' father is. And he's not going to be these kids' father, but he can be a really cool presence in their life, a really important other kind of male figure.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Really, who doesn't need multiple models of masculinity, right? We all need multiple models of masculinity. So there's a beautiful space for kids to have lots of men who love them and, you know, celebrate them.
I love that. That's amazing. And my last question, well, two, but this is the last one in here and then one just for you. But the last question is kind of, how do we approach conversations with our kids on this choice of parents wanting to separate? Like our son is young. Like I said, he's almost 2 and we've said it to him. I know he doesn't understand yet, but we have kind of brought it up. But wanting to just be open from the beginning and just even how do we, you know, why are you guys not living together, or these questions that may come up later on or are potentially happening for those who are experiencing this with older kids, kind of approaching that conversation with your children?
Well, I think it goes back to our own work as parents, because the degree to which I can rest comfortably in my story is the degree to which I can offer a wholehearted story to my kids, right? So it really is the parent's work of being able to hold on to, you know, the other parent is a good person, but not a good partner for me.
Yeah.
The degree which I can really feel that is the degree which I can look my kid in the eyes and say, it makes sense that you wish we all lived in the same house. And this is what our family looks like. All families look different. And this is what works best, you know, for our family. And that it's not an apology and it's not, I'm going to make it up to you. It is helping our kids rest with as much ease as possible in the reality, and that our kids get to feel sad, you know, sad at moments and happy in moments and excited that there's two different bedrooms and frustrated sometimes that there's two different bedrooms, that all of that, we as parents can make space for all of that. Yeah, that makes sense. Of course, that makes sense too. Oh yeah. And that also makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Just that we can hold lots of, you know, dimensions of our kids' experiences. But what's so hard is that, right, in a moment when our kid is sad, it takes us into guilt.
Yes.
We feel guilty that it is. Okay, so now I have to, you know, hold my guilt, like be gentle with my guilt and decenter my own guilt so that I can do what I need to do, which is stay present to my kid's experience.
Thank you so much. And so my my last question is for you. So I kind of created this podcast as a way to honor the woman within the mother, because I think it goes so quick, like you're a girl and then 24 hours later, you're mother, and then you're just like parenting and then have all these other life experiences. And sometimes just I've found from myself and the other women and moms and stuff that I interview that we forget the woman a little bit. So honoring the woman within the mother is the premise of this podcast. So I would love to know how you honor the woman within you.
What a beautiful idea of the woman within the mother. Yeah. I think that I don't have a particularly elegant answer to that, except
okay.
that I think my work, I really do think my work that there are times I think of my work as, you know, I think, there are moments where I feel like my work and my motherhood compete with each other, right? And I feel guilty that every minute I devote to work is a minute I don't devote to my kids. But then there are other times where I think, oh, thank goodness I have this work, because if I was devoting all of my minutes to my kids, I would just be like smushing them right up and breathing down their necks and like, folk, you know, so there are times when I think, oh, my work actually is a mercy for my kids, that it kind of keeps me focused on something besides what they're doing in any given moment. And my work a lot, you know, I think about the ways in which my work is a celebration of my womanhood, that I love, you know, back in the days pre-pandemic, I loved that I would get to create outfits to be on stage. You know, my outfit is a part of it's a part of my shtick, right? So, you know, choosing the perfect pair of heels and the right dress and the makeup that I want to feel really beautiful in, like all that adornment stuff to me is so much a part of my womanhood, and it becomes a part of my teaching. And so I think that there's a way in which then my teaching and my sharing my messages is an extension of my celebration of my womanhood.
Ooh, girl. Yes. Yes to all of that. Well, thank you. I'll just leave a quick space if you want to share anything or last little pieces of thoughts or anything like that. Otherwise, that's it.
Great. I would love, you know, I would love for your listeners to know about this e-course that we launched a couple of months ago. It's called Intimate Relationships 101. And because it's about the self and relationship, people can take this class. There's people all over the world who are taking it now. It's self-guided e-course, and you can take it with a partner. You can take it without a partner. So it's for single people, dating married people, to take alone or together. But it is a really comprehensive journey into, you know, my two decades of work. And there's lots of videos and worksheets and chances to integrate. And the platform we're using also has a community space. So students are commenting as they go and I'm responding to comments. It's been really fun. So that would just be courses.dralexandrasolomon.com.
Perfect. And I'll link that as well, so that if anyone wants to, they just go straight to the bio or on our social media, and I'll just make sure that they know where to go to find all of your juicy info. So thank you, really, from the bottom of my heart. I'm just so grateful that you chose to share your time with us today. So
it was a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in. As always, if you enjoyed, leave us a review. It really supports our channel and it helps it to grow and let other people who might be interested in this stuff find us. And then also, please just share it, subscribe, love it, whatever it is that you guys do to keep supporting. We appreciate it so much, and we will chat on the next episode.